Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Gold Cup fans, it's Gold Cup Day at Royal Ascot. And the Thursday slate, one thing we've learned over the years, it's almost as if everything else kind of clears out. the rest of the action is, just okay. The Gold Cup takes priority. It'll be the fourth today, of course, the Group One, and a rich £500,000 going 2.5 miles. The Ascot Gold Cup. I guess we can listen to the whole run of it. Why not? And we'll certainly have plenty of conversation leading in Stradivarius. In fact, I saw a video this morning of Stradivarius arriving, and Stradivarius, what, 2 years? 2 years ago? 2 years ago, your winner. Then last year, what was he? He was fourth last year. It's amazing, in fact, how some of the principals, come back and run in this, on a regular basis. In fact, you've got Princess Zoe back in here too, who I think was second last year. Second last year behind Subjectivist, and a 7-year-old mare now, Anthony Mullins. So we're going to have a conversation with Vance Hansen first. Vance joining us. And we'll see if he's got any ideas about today. I've put up Kev's plays. I think we're going to catch up with Kev. It's up to him if he wants to do it today or if he wants to do it early tomorrow to fill out the back half of Royal Ascot. And, of course, yesterday Kev had that nice winner that paid $1,470 and then had another, had another little each-way success. So he's kind of treading water in terms of some of his action. And today, in fact, he picked Princess Zoe in the Gold Cup, so we'll watch for that. And Kev today, it seems like he took a couple of middle price type horses, Israr in the King George. He acknowledges Wall Bank in the Norfolk. The Norfolk, of course, for the 2-year-olds. No North Americans in there today. In fact, let me pull up the pricing that, because I had to reboot and lost everything that was up there. 26 minutes to the Norfolk to start things off. And in terms of favorite, the Antarctic is 9-5, actually, and Wall Bank 3-1. So Wall Bank, who was 7-4 in the shops, second choice right now behind the Dark Angel, Coolmore, O'Brien, Moore favorite. And these are the 2-year-olds, of course, and a couple of other interests. Thunder Moore, Kev thinks, has got a shot and actually has taken money. 13-1 was trading higher. This one for Kevin Ryan and Danny Tudhope. There's a horse of Michael O'Callaghan's taking money. For AMO Racing, 6-1 on Crispy Cat and Brave Nation, another one of those Sioux nations that we have obviously become aware of this week. Two Sioux nations in here that we mentioned yesterday. Bakil on the inside for Andrew Balding, 16-1, the 1 and the 2, Brave Nation. Michael Bell, Sioux Nation colt is 9-2. So there's a quick glance. Not a big, not a overwhelming size field. Here's a horse on the outside, at least numerically. The 11 Pillow Talk. This is a Kodiak for Carl Burke, and I had read a little bit about Pillow Talk leading in some of the previews. 10-1 on Pillow Talk. And of course, the other day, the one thing I didn't get a chance to mention yesterday after Tuesday's opener, Coltrane Certainly alerted everybody to Coltrane, and that was a nice performance. His win going back to, I think it was what, was it the Ascot? It was the Ascot Stakes on Tuesday. Yeah, at a nice price. So a lot of fun. People, I think, you know, people that every year people tune into this and they sort of, you know, feel their way. They learn, and you know, some people I know are flummoxed by the camera angles and the lack of the color saddle cloths. You know, the dark royal blue. The way in which you need to follow your horse essentially is to get familiar with the silks and the cap a lot of times, and that's the best you can do. You know, especially on the straight, at least on the when they're on the round course, it's a little easier because of the way the camera pans. And you can latch on and you see you know, a horse that, and the callers do a terrific job going through the whole field, you know, several times, especially if it's a race of any, you know, of any length. A little tougher when, you know, when there's 18 or 20 of them on the straight and they're, you know, they're all the way across the track. It's tough to get the numbers, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So looking forward to it. The schedule today, the Norfolk first, and after the Norfolk, Vance is going to join us here shortly. And after the Norfolk, a visit from Alan Foreman. And I gave you a couple of asides about the situation with the Texas Racing Commission. And if you didn't see Dan Ross's piece in TDN, Dan has a pretty extensive fleshing out. And this thing, there's been tons of hyperbole in every direction, from those that rush to the defense of HISA. If anybody dares question elements of this, you know, there's the pom-pomming for every single thing. They have not done a great job communicating, and you would think that this would have been an important situation to sort of handhold, as opposed to bludgeon and threaten it's just amazing. I mean, one of the easiest things to do was to have a communications officer brought in, you know, as a point person for this, and there really hasn't been any of that. I mean, Lisa Lazarus out there answering as many questions as possible, and she did go to Texas with the lawyers to meet with Cook, the racing commission head, and I'm going to use Alan as the best resource and option in terms of explaining what this means. And you can see, if you've been following the communications efforts of Texas and Cook, they're inviting other states to, you know, take the same tact, essentially. It's a vitriol. It's a vitriol fest, to say the least. So we'll get Alan in here. I want to touch base with Tony, and we've got to get his input on what transpired with Errat Ortiz, who received a 5-day suspension handed down by the stewards for his rather erratic riding the other day. So there's a few things that a couple of lessons, it seems, that Errat is receiving on this trip. Yeah, to say the least. So I want to get Tony's perspective. I think Sean Clancy is going to be by as well. We'll talk to Sean. I know he's been, didn't we talk to Sean a few years ago while he was over there? I want to get to Rich Eng, who I haven't talked to. I feel just terrible the last couple of weeks. We part of it was the situation that I had to deal with. So you can lay all of it essentially at my feet in terms of not being able to get Rich in. So we'll get Rich in as well. I want to be able to look ahead the weekend preview tomorrow, and the major card, if you haven't looked ahead yet and checked into the draws, you do have, and if you ever wanted a harbinger of the summer, I would think that Haskell Day preview card at Monmouth will do it for you. Big card on Saturday at Monmouth, and it'll go 14 races deep. The stakes are late. The stakes come as races 11 through 14. The Eatontown for the fillies and mares on the grass. And this has got a few familiar names. Chad Brown certainly feels like Chad is well positioned on the day. He's got Fluffy Socks, that of course was second to stablemate Bleecker Street, who then followed up, of course, the other day in the New York, winning the Grade One. So Fluffy Socks, major player going into the Eatontown. You look at what they pulled together for the Pegasus. This is the three-year-old traditional prep for the Haskell. There's a few names in here you know, like Dash Attack, who won the traditional prep for the Pegasus, won the Long Branch at the beginning of the meet. You've also got that Mr. Jefferson for Mike Trombetta. And, of course, Mr. Jefferson, second to stablemate Joe in the Tessio. Then Joe turns around and wins the James Murphy. And Mr. Jefferson was a decent third behind Ethereal Road and B-Doc in the Sir Barton on the Preakness undercard. You've also got, you know, a couple of other horses that look to be emergent. Homebrew, we are going to talk to Brad Cox today. He's got Homebrew, who won the Oaklawn Stake near the end of the Oaklawn season. So you got there a player for Gary and Mary West. There's Street Sense Homebred. How about Electability for Chad and Seth Klarman? This a quality road gelding that was third in the Peter Pan. You've also got the Monmouth Stake. This is the turf counterpoint to the Eatontown. Big, good field. And again, Chad is absolutely prominent when he's got the likes of Public Sector in here. He's got Sacred Life, and of course Sacred Life, a winner at Monmouth in the Oceanport last year. He's 7 years old now, Sacred Life. But Hidden Stash shows up in here for Vicky Oliver, a couple of other familiar names, locals like Greg Sacco with Ocean's Map, and good old Glynn County. Mike Maker for the Wyckoffs. Tax makes a return. Raise your hand if you realize that Tax was still in training. Yeah, Tax comes back in this spot. Has been away for almost a year and a half. Almost a year and a half. Danny Gargan and Randy Hill. Randy sent me a text the other day. He was in Thailand. He sent me a picture of him having lunch with an elephant. It was the craziest thing. He said he's getting excited for Saratoga. That gets us to the nightcap, the Salvatore Mile, one of the really historic race. Hot Rod Charlie. Hot Rod Charlie comes back to Monmouth. And, of course, things sort of went awry for him in the Haskell last year. We don't have to remind you of that. You've also got the likes of Helium in here from Mark Cassie, the four-year-old who's kind of waded into the action, kind of under the radar, with a couple of Woodbine allowance tries. Fat Man, now eight, makes his second start of the year. How about Cheryl Spite, your Maker's Mark winner back in April on the grass? He's going to see if he can't translate over to the dirt. Kind of interesting that Roger Atfield, and by the way, Roger Atfield, two wins away from 1,000 or no, 2,000? He's got a milestone. He's just a couple of wins away. So anyway, you got a Mind Control also in the Salvatore Mile coming out of the efforts in the Carter and in the Churchill Downs. Johnny V gets back aboard, and Johnny is plenty familiar with the Brunetti 6-year-old. So a very good stake sequence on the big card, the Haskell Day preview card at Oceanport, Fast Times on the Jersey Shore. Beautiful Monmouth Park, and Vance Hansen standing by. He's listening in to, and I bet you, Vance, you're excited already for the Monmouth card Saturday.
I am. It looks like a very good card, as you were just kind of going through those fields there, and that'll be very interesting to see, especially how Hot Rod Charlie comes back and as he preps for his major summer goals.
Well, and of course, The Monmouth Haskell preview card coincides beautifully. Picks up the baton after Saturday's big card at Royal Ascot, and the Saturday card always includes the Jubilee. Used to be the Diamond Jubilee. It's been elevated to platinum this year for the for the Queen's celebration. Very good finish to this stand, Vance. When we look at tomorrow's card, that coronation and the Commonwealth should be spectacular. We got 2-year-olds tomorrow with the Albany, then some big fields in the handicap type races. So we're going to finish with a flourish. Any thoughts about today to convey before we talk Friday and Saturday?
Today, we're going to start off in here in the Norfolk Stakes for 2-year-olds in the first race, and I do respect the one of the favorites here, number 10, Wallbank, but I am going to take a bit of a shot here with number 8, The Riddler, for Richard Fahey, who won this race last year in an upset with Perfect Power. I was very impressed with The Riddler's last couple of starts, broke his maiden second out, did it very smoothly, and looked very mature for a 2-year-old. And then last time in a lucrative conditions race at Beverly, he drew a poor post, Fahey thought, and by the time he got really rolling at the very end, the wire came up just a bit too soon for him. So I think the Riddler is a horse to be looking for in the final stages of the Norfolk today. In the Ribblesdale, race number 3 today, I do like number 4, Mukadama, for Roger Varian, who I thought was a little unlucky not to win this race last year with Ashada. And I think the two fillies are kind of coming in with similar profiles, and Mukadama finished third in an Oaks trial last out at Newbury, which was a very very good race, it turns out. It included Nashua, the Gosden filly, who would run third in the Epsom Oaks. And then the runner-up, Stay Alert, came back to win the stakes at Newbury last week. So Mukadama, I think, is going to be very well-suited to stepping up to a mile and a half in the Ribblesdale today. A little later in the card, you mentioned the Gold Cup at the top of the hour. I'm with Kev Humphreys here. I do like Princess Zoe to improve on her second-place finish from last year's Gold Cup. Most of her career, she seemed like a soft-turf type, but she's really stepped up her game in her two prior visits at Ascot. Regardless of surface condition, she was a good second in the Gold Cup last year to a loose on the lead winner, and then she prepped well, winning the Cigarro over 2 miles at Ascot last month. So Princess Zoe, I think, is the value play in the Gold Cup. Stradivarius, I think we've seen signs of him regressing, showing his age over the last year. He'll be about 2-1 today, perhaps less. That's a better price than we got last year, but still it's a bit too short for me to take. And the favorite, Kyprios, for Aidan O'Brien, he could be the real deal for sure. I just don't think him stretching out to two and beyond to a mile and three quarters for the first time today. He hasn't performed well outside of Ireland yet. I just am reluctant to take too short of odds on Kyprios. with that back history so far. So Princess Zoe for me in the Gold Cup. And then I'll mention the final graded stakes of the day, the Hampton Court. Of course, the Queen's Reach for the Moon is the heavy odds-on favorite. If she wins, it's going to be a spectacular moment in Ascot history. I am willing to take a shot against the 2-5 favorite in there, though, with the number one Claymore, who was second in a very key edition of the Craven Stakes, it turns out, behind Native Trail. The third place finisher there, Huyo Mal, was an upset second in the Epsom Derby, and a horse that kind of finished in the back, nearly won yesterday's Queen's Vaz. So Claymore, I think, comes out of a pretty good effort in the Craven two back. Last time he tried the French 2000 guineas, drew the widest post, was rushed into contention to find position, just didn't find it, and basically gave up entering the stretch. I think he's a better horse than that. And, you know, if he can grab the lead in the Hampton Court this afternoon, I think he could give Reach for the Moon a bit of a tussle.
8-1 early, and the one Claymore in the sixth, which goes off at 12:35 Eastern, and I'll remind everybody as the morning goes on of Vance's other ideas. Princess Zoe in the Gold Cup, which comes at 11:20, and Mukadama for Roger Vary in the four in the Ribblesdale. There we go. We're about 8 minutes to the kickoff here, the Norfolk, and let's see if there's been much movement. There really hasn't been. Wallbank still 5-2, and the Antarctic is still 2-1. 9-2 on Brave Nation, and Kev's interesting play. Thundermore, currently 14-1, the 9 for Kev. But he acknowledges Wallbank and how tough Wallbank will be to open the 5 furlong action today at Royal Ascot. Let's turn to Friday and Saturday. Vance Hansen with us, the Quiet Assassin, as he's known around here. And Vance, let's take a look. And of course, the cards all start with these two-year-old races. Some thoughts about the Albany opening things up tomorrow.
Yep, I kind of like a couple long shots in there too. Number both about 15-1 morning line. Number 15 Power Dress hails from the Richard Buchanan Yard, which has won this race three times in the last 20 years. In its 20-year history, I should say, it's won it three times. I liked her debut in early April at Newmarket. Traveled smoothly throughout, and although she had to be asked to just get up in the nick of time, I think 5 furlongs was a bit short for her. I think she's going to improve stretching out to 6. And then a little longer shot I kind of like in the Albany, it's Kathy Come Home, first crop of from Breeders' Cup Mile winner Expert Eye. I thought her maiden win at Musselburgh was look good visually, and she's going to have to step up against this kind of competition, but I think she would be a good each-way play at the higher odds.
Kathy Come Home is the 4 for Carl Burke, and
number 15 Power Dress.
There it is, Power. You gotta run your eyes up and down the PPs to find, because they're not, you know, they're not in PP order or barrier order. They're in barrier order. They're not in PP order. So Power Dress for Richard Hannon, the 15. Very good. All right. And, you know, two questions quickly, Vance. I don't know if you heard yesterday when I was speculating on these big open length wins that we were seeing. And we've had a bunch of finishes, these first couple of days that seem out of character. And I speculated that it's the firm going, that's kind of triggering these blowouts. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think that's definitely a factor, and it's probably intertwined also with the unusually high heat they're experiencing over there this week. I mean, this is very unusual weather for England at any time of the year, I think, and if last I checked, I think it was supposed to be up close to 90 degrees tomorrow. So you could be seeing some horses. You could be seeing some horses, you know, maybe kind of struggle to deal with the elements over this week.
How about that? Let's press into one of the absolute, what is anticipated as one of the best races of the week, and the Commonwealth Cup, the first of the two Group 1s tomorrow.
Yeah, this is the one race where I did kind of go chalky for my 2 days up on Twin Spires. I do like Perfect Power. He's been a favorite horse of mine over the last couple of years, especially after I tabbed him last
That's
year
right.
in the Norfolk. And, you know, he wound up being the best champion juvenile sprinter in Europe last year. And he picked up where he left off winning the Greenham Stakes to start this season. They stepped him up to the 2,000 guineas. He just didn't last the mile. Connections are going to just stick him to sprints for the remainder of the year. And, you know, until they depose him until he proves otherwise, I think he's still the leader of the sprinting crop. So he's my top selection in the Commonwealth Cup. I'm also very keen on number 3, Araz, for Shadwell. He's a course and distance winner last year, and he's looked really good in his first couple of starts this year, just narrowly missing last time in the stakes at Newbury. I think he's going to relish the conditions, and he looks like a big, strong, imposing colt, and he should be flying late.
He's interesting, and he certainly has kept nice company when you see Go Bears Go in here, and he also faced off Hierarchy in here for Hugo Palmer, finished ahead of him. We saw Hierarchy last year in the Breeders' Cup in the juvenile sprint. Anything for the Duke of Edinburgh? I know you generally like the graded action.
Yeah, I lean towards the graded action, no handicap opinions. However, I would like to mention that one of our Twin Spires contributors, Alistair Bull, is kind of covering a major handicap every day this week. And on Tuesday in the Ascot Stakes, he tabbed the 15-1 winner,
Coltrane,
and tabbed the $440 trifecta. So anybody interested in checking out one of the major handicaps and how to play it, check out Alistair's stuff at the Twin Spires Edge.
Excellent. I'll put out a link. Actually, I did see that he liked Coltrane. Let's get to the coronation. And I suppose if there's a race all week that doesn't include Wesley Ward, that North American audiences are excited about, it has to be this coronation. And you don't have to, you don't have to be a Spenderella or Pizza Bianca fan to be excited. This could end up being the best race of the whole week.
I agree with that. I mean, it could go any number of ways. I mean, you could probably make a case for, seven to eight fillies in this race, really. The favorite is Inspiral, last year's top two-year-old filly. You know, she's going to be 2-1 or less in this race. She hasn't run since October. She met with setbacks that kept her out of the guineas. And traditionally, this race is just not one that's won by a horse or even attempted often to be won by a horse making their season debut. At the price, I'm willing to try and take a stab against Inspiral. The filly I landed on is a bit of a flyer, number 12, Tenebrism, for Aidan O'Brien. She was one of the top two-year-old fillies last year as well, off her tremendous late spurt to win the Cheveley Park Stakes. They tried her at a mile in the 1,000 guineas, which was won by Cachet in a gate-to-wire victory. Tenebrism just didn't show up that day. O'Brien is willing to try a mile with her again. I think that's a good move. Her sire won twice at Royal Ascot, Coravaggio. She's out of a coronation winner, Immortal Verse. At 15-1 in the morning line, she might be worth hoping that she can rediscover her best two-year-old form. So she's kind of my long shot play for the coronation.
I like it, 15-1, and of course, Inspiral for Cheverly Park and John Gosden is going to be focused. It's going to be very interesting. I haven't checked the Antipost to see what Spenderella's trading at right now, but Graham Motion reaches for William Buick, and I think that she's a very, very serious filly from everything we've seen so far. In the U.S. Let me, before we talk about the mile and a half King Edward, the Group 2, let's check back in. And I got to get ready to pull up the Norfolk action. We're about a minute to post. And, yeah, there we go. All right, Vance, let me... ooh, we've got somebody who has got virtually every one of the starter staff. Who is that, Vance? Can you see that? Who is that?
Unfortunately, I think that's my top selection, the Riddler.
Well, it might take Frank Gorshin to get him into the... Oh, my God. I've never seen this many Gatesmen loading a horse. That's hysterical. All right, there we go.
Almost about him. They got the blindfold on.
Well, hopefully they take it off this time. That was quite an embarrassment the other day with Lord North. I guess it got caught in the bridle, but come on. Just about set for the Norfolk day three.
And thereof, day three begins with the Norfolk Stakes. A fast start by Bakil, and also well to the fore, Crispy Cat, just restrained as Jungle Fever in the blue shows speed, and so too does the favourite Wallbank. The purple and white colours, very handy. The dark blue, the Antarctic, and on the extreme right, that is Thundermore. Brave Nation, the green, a little further back in midfield, the grey jacket of Pillow Talk. Redemption Time is last of all following at the Riddler. Jungle Fever, Bakil, the green sleeves, and Wallbank poised as they come past halfway and run down towards the two. Wallbank just getting a squeeze now from Ross O'Ryan. Bakil is driven. Jungle Fever weakening. Pillow Talk trying to come into it. The Antarctic two from the right. The extreme right. Thundermore and Brave Nation picking up ground as well. And on the extreme left, the Riddler is very competitive as they now run inside the last furlong. And the Riddler over on the far side. Brave Nation is finishing strongly. Wallbank is still in the thick of it. The three of them come together here. The Riddler just getting on top close to the finish. And the Riddler and Paul Hannigan go on to win the Norfolk. Denying Wallbank is close for second with Crispy Cat running on, and then Brave Nation.
He does it again. The Quiet Assassin shows up and delivers. You're unbelievable. The Riddler at 44-1. Oh, Vance Hansen. Unbelievable.
What a great start to the meet for me, and it's all gravy from here, I think.
You think so? You think a $90?
I think so.
You think a $90 winner, you think that's going to put you ahead for the stand?
Yes. This couldn't come at a better time. I've got a vacation planned next month and was still trying to figure out how to pay for it. So,
well, I think you paid for it. Unbelievable, Vance. You've done it again. And, of course, you mentioned the one from last year, which was only a $30 horse. Unbelievable. And the way he was loading, you get a little edgy. I'll tell you what. Paul Hannigan, he came over, about seven paths to make sure that the Riddler saw what was going on to his inside. And actually, it really felt, Vance, like he needed to do that because he more or less re-engaged and really kind of surged once he confronted the horses to his inside.
I agree. There's a bit of a caution on my part now because he came over so much that he did kind of cut in front of the rival there in the final stages. So I'm very... That doesn't look good. So I don't think that horse that he passed in front of was going to win regardless. So I hope they keep him up. But I'm sure the stewards are going to take a look at this, and I got to cross my fingers.
I agree. And I think the horse that he came across, I think that was it might have been Brave Nation or maybe was it Jungle Fever? It was in that yellow green.
It looked like Brave Nation, I think.
Yeah, who did finish fourth in here. Right now the feed is just showing the provisional result, and are you watching one of the network feeds, either TVG or are they sticking with it? They showing what's going on?
Yeah, they're just replaying the head on here. So on my network feed. So
all right, keep me.
I'm not able to hear any of the. I'm not able to hear any of the commentary, so I don't know if it's being looked at yet or not.
Well, and the problem with these UK feeds. At any point they could jump to South Africa here too. the way this thing goes. Well, I'll tell you what, they're showing prices, Vance. Oh no! That's Chelmsford. That was Chelmsford. They just flashed. Yeah, I've got the small screen up, and I saw official result. But then I opened it up, and it was Chelmsford.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
all right. Well, we're going to have to sweat this out.
We still have some anxious moments.
All right. So let's get in anything else for Friday, Saturday. The King Edward. Any push on King Edward? Small field.
It's a small field. It's not one of the best fields they've ever had. Changing of the Guard is going to be a heavy favorite there coming out of the Epsom Derby. A long shot I'd look for in the King Edward is Grand Alliance, who is a little further up the track than in the Derby behind Changing of the Guard. But I thought his form before that was pretty decent. He might take to Ascot a little better than Epsom. And the stretch out to a mile and a half, I think, is going to help Grand Alliance a little bit. He's number 3 listed at 20-1 morning line.
Very good. All right. Saturday, before we go.
Saturday, they just made the declarations this morning, so I haven't had a chance to dive deep into them yet. The two big races, I'd mentioned the Hardwick. Hurricane Lane is going to be a big favorite in that race, and he's one of the more exciting three-year-olds last year, so it'll be interesting to see how he's come back this year with the Arc, I presume, being his target in the fall. Third Realm, who was my Derby pick a year ago, I think, comes off a big win recently at Goodwood, and so he might be one to look for in the Hardwick. And we mentioned the Platinum Jubilee. That has 27 starters going up. So Campanelli is going to have to beat 26 horses in Saturday's feature. That should be an unbelievable spectacle. And I don't have any firm opinions on that race yet, but it's definitely a must-see watching Saturday morning.
There you go. Unbelievable. Vance Hansen, just fabulous. And are we seeing anything further? Are we okay here? Are we clear?
I have not seen yet, unfortunately.
All right, and I'm just looking at some. I'll just hear some other some result should stand. Here's somebody saying maybe a fine or a couple of days perhaps for Hannigan, but I think
okay,
I think you're. Right? I think we're good.
It looks like they've taken the winner's circle photos. I've seen that on Twitter, so I think we might be good there.
Unbelievable. There we go. Unbelievable. Vance Hansen, it does it again, the Quiet Assassin, and on the Twin Spires blog roll, you'll get his full, I'll put the link up and his tabs for tomorrow, and I'll remind everybody the rest of the day. Vance, once again, you're unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Good talking to you.
Always fun. Vance Hansen, everybody. He's the greatest. I would say he basically just he basically had enough of Twitter, so he had the Twitter account for a while, and then, as you can tell, there's just this certain calm and just wonderful air of confidence about Vance Anson that is to me delightful, and he does this every single year. I mean, him and Kev, I just cannot be beat. And here's your live on-air 44-1 push. And I think I've already heard from two people who jumped aboard listening in. I love it. That's the best. All right, we're going to have Alan Foreman in here, and we got about 20 minutes to spend with Alan because I know he's got a busy day. And Alan, you know, the state of Texas and HISA making this interesting for everybody. At the very least, it gives me a reason to call you regularly. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What do you, again, I'll ask you the same question I did the last 2 weeks. What do we know? What should we understand about what is transpiring?
What we should understand is that HISA, the new Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, is going into effect on July 1. I'm not aware of any pending court proceedings that could possibly enjoin the startup of HISA. So I think that if there's a takeaway right now, is this law is going into effect on July 1. The authority is empowered to enforce it. I think they will seek to enforce it. There are multiple efforts across the country to get everyone to understand what the requirements are and to learn about and understand what the purpose of HISA is and what's going to happen when it takes effect. And that's really the bottom line. The rest of it, I think, is just a lot of jousting and noise. And it's all moving forward.
A couple of things. I should mention that at 1 o'clock today, and I thank Gary Falter from the Jockey Club, Gary sending out the notice and the reminder, and I'd forgotten about it. 1 o'clock today, another one of these Zoom webinars about, you know, for registrants and explaining whatever aspect of the process people need to understand. There's another Q&A at TDN as well with Lisa Lazarus. I'll put up the link to this session. They expect it to last about an hour. And of course, you did one as well. We talked to Joe Applebaum the other day when the THA seminar, which was really well attended. Has that been mounted for people to visit as well, a permanent site?
Yeah, it's mounted on the THA website. It's mounted on what we call, or has been created for the continuing education portion of HISA, called Horseman's U. There are multiple Zoom meetings taking place almost every day. I'm going out to Laurel when I leave the call with you to another meeting with the Maryland Horsemen at 11:30 that has been opened up on Zoom, and Lisa Lazarus and Ann McGovern are going to participate. We're continuing to try to educate our horsemen, answer questions, debunk conspiracy theories and other misinformation that is going around, and trying to hopefully make horsemen understand what's coming, how it will impact them, and why it's important to register. I mean, our job, I'm out there a lot, Steve, and it almost makes it appear as if I'm the face of HISA. Our responsibility in leadership is to inform our membership as to what the new requirements of law are and how they can comply and how we can best help them to comply and understand what's going on. And that's why we're doing this. We're going to continue to do it. And we take a lot of bullets while we're doing it, but nonetheless, it's just important for everyone to understand that this law is going into effect July 1, and we have to be in a position to be able to adapt to it.
from your perspective in this, Alan, and I before I mention the webinar, I was headed into a question about the Texas, I mean, if you want to call it defiance, explain what you think the motivation is of the Texas Racing Commission and Chairman Cook, who joined us a couple of weeks ago. What do you think their end game is here, and what do they think they're hoping to achieve?
Well, I think they're hoping to achieve perhaps gaining support across the industry for what would be a defiant stance, perhaps to delay the implementation of HISA, to somehow stop this effort towards national uniformity. I mean, this is a textbook example of why we could not, as an industry, accomplish this on our own. It's why we ended up in the boat that we're in. I think the most, probably the most important statement I saw coming out of the media reports the last couple of days from Texas was when I think the executive director, Ms. Cook, said, we don't even have a safety program. We're going to take the next year and a half to create a safety program that hopefully will be as good, if not better, than what HISA is doing. And I thought that was, you know, that to me was the most striking statement of what has been said. We don't have a safety program. The whole purpose of HISA is to ensure that we have a national safety program, that we have a national uniform anti-doping and drug testing program. And, you know, we're not in an era where the states can do it on their own, decide what is best for them. And that's why we have HISA, and that's why this is going to move forward. I suspect that they will not be successful. I don't think they'll be successful in court. They have not been successful in court. They have elected to discontinue simulcasting so that they don't have to comply. I don't see how that benefits Texas racing, but nonetheless, that's the position they're going to take. And they can't point the fingers and say it's been caused by anybody else. It's a decision that they've made for themselves.
What is the legal definition? Because the letter that that Cook wrote, and that the Texas Racing Commissioner's letter that they wrote, they're taking a certain narrow view of what they're bound to as a state agency by Texas law. Why is that, you know, why are they thinking the way they're thinking, maybe, or why do they think that it doesn't apply to them in terms of the way, you know, HISA was codified essentially through the legal process?
Because they don't accept the doctrine of preemption. Okay, the key to HISA is that it preempts state law and all state laws as it pertains to the regulation of the use of medication, drug testing, doping, and the health, safety, and welfare of the horse by state law. Okay, it preempts state law, and HISA steps into the place of the states. Okay. And I understand Texas's argument that we're charged by our legislature to minutely regulate horse racing in the best interest of not only the industry but the citizens of the state of Texas. But every state that has legalized horse racing has the same or similar language. We, up until the creation of HISA, were a state-sanctioned, state-controlled, state-regulated business. HISA changes that, and the hammer of HISA is that in order to achieve uniformity with respect to the health, safety, and welfare of horse and rider, the federal government has stepped in to create a mechanism to achieve one set of rules, one set of standards, and the ability to create those standards and enforce those standards. And that scheme, by the way, has been upheld in numerous other instances. And I know there's discussion about this Wild Fifth Circuit ruling recently that we talked about a few weeks ago, A lot of people think that ruling was outside the mainstream, but time will tell. But like anything else, HISA goes into effect July 1, and if at some time after July 1 a court strikes HISA down, then the industry will deal with it at that point in time. But absent some intervention by a court or a stay or an injunction, HISA goes into effect and does become the law. You know, there's a Ray Pawlak wrote a really good column this morning, and I invite people to read it. And he compares the implementation of HISA to the implementation of Obamacare. And all of the anguish and lawsuits and states' rights arguments that were flying when Congress legalized Obamacare. I mean, it's almost a parallel situation here. And at the end of the day, notwithstanding court rulings and court fights that continued beyond the implementation of Obamacare and the claim of states' rights and refusal of states to cooperate and all the changes that were made that had everyone upset about how their health care was going to change, it went into effect. And it is in effect now, and we've learned to adapt to it. So I think there are parallels here. This is, you know, a major change for the industry. There are a lot of individuals who are having trouble coming to grips with it or don't like it or don't believe the federal government should be in our business. But it really doesn't matter because it's the law, and the law is going into effect in 14 days.
What can we anticipate in terms of ramifications? One of the threats that's kind of been hung out there, Alan, is that if people aren't registered, they can expect to have their horses scratched. Who exactly is going to administer this? Because we really haven't had any indication that there's a staff. And as you and I have kind of touched on a few times, the communication vehicle has been woeful. In terms of a way in which to communicate with them as a entity. I'm just curious, who's going to, be the administrating force here exactly?
Well, look, I think it's best that HISA or representatives of HISA answer that question. I know they have their staff is linked to Equibase and to the racing offices, and they will be working through the racing offices. So, for example, if Alan Foreman makes an entry for July 1st, the racing office will red flag that that person has not been registered, or the horse that has been entered has not been registered. That individual will be notified and told that they need to register in order for the horse to run. We know that it's probably going to be a bumpy road in the beginning. I think a lot that has to do with HISA is going to be a bumpy road until we settle into the new system. And I think that HISA is certainly going to work with the industry to do the best it can. But the law is very clear that a horse cannot participate in what's called a covered race, covered horse, unless that horse and the responsible person for that horse, the owner and the trainer, are registered with HISA. And it's going to have to happen. And those who choose not to do it, refuse to do it, or otherwise, are not going to be able to race. And eventually they'll have to make a decision whether or not they want to continue to participate in racing or not. It's required by the statute. This is not some mechanism that HISA thought up as a way to get everybody into the system. The regulatory scheme that HISA is employing right now, the regulations that they are adopting, come right out of the statute. Statutory language, and the Federal Trade Commission, which oversees this, has to ensure that whatever HISA is doing is consistent with the statute. And I looked at the statute again last night, and you can see it all laid out, and it's very clear. It doesn't leave any gray areas with respect to registration, with respect to participation, with respect to rulemaking or otherwise. And I think the problem is, quite frankly, that, and it's like anything. HISA was there. People were going about their day-to-day business. Now that it is about to become a reality and people have to focus on it, they understand the realities of what is required. They're starting to get upset. They want to know more. They want more information. They're asking questions. And so we do these webinars. And I will tell you that Lisa Lazarus and her staff, every time we get a question from a horseman, we send it directly to Lisa, and she answers them. She talks to individuals. She will talk on the phone with individuals. They are as responsive. It's actually better than I thought it would be. But they've been extremely responsive, and they're trying to address misinformation. They're trying to address conspiracy theories. That's why we have these webinars that we're out in the open. We get proper information to people. And I think the more that we do this, the more we get the information out, and the more that people understand what is trying to be achieved here, you know, we'll be fine. But it's bumpy right now.
Well, we will see. We're now, today's the 16th, so we're exactly 2 weeks away, right? July 1st.
All the horsemen's organizations are out there trying to get their horsemen registered. And they're having success. I mean, look, there's a group who are just not going to do it until, I guess, they do it kicking and screaming. There's some talking litigation. They want to hire lawyers. They want to challenge. That's all well and good. Our job right now is to try to make the transition to the new system as smooth as possible and have the least negative impact. And quite frankly, you know, when you look at a lot of these things, what we're spending time looking at right now is, okay, so we're going into HISA. What is different? What is going to change from what you are currently doing now under your state rules? And that's what we will be pointing out to horsemen. They're not major changes, and there will be adjustments made by HISA as we start to focus on, well, maybe this was not well thought out. Maybe we should be doing A instead of B. And that'll continue, and I think that we'll have a very receptive audience with HISA. But the fact of the matter is the law requires this to get started, and that's what's going to happen on July 1.
Well, it occurs to me, Alan. I'll actually be on vacation, so I will miss the first, let's say 6-7 days. I think we're going to come back on July 7th and 8th from Indiana, actually, leading into Indiana Derby Day. But we'll have at least a week's worth of fallout, such as it might be, as this thing comes into play and the opening moments of it. In the meantime, we can just keep inviting people to watch these webinars. I just put the link up for those that want to register at Owner's View, the TOBA website for the 1 o'clock seminar today. You can visit Horseman U, which has been established by the THA, by Alan and all the affiliates, New York and everywhere else, for essentially a primer to help horsemen and owners and horsemen staffs to be ready for this, to make it as smooth as possible. I suppose we all have to pull in the same direction on this, Alan.
Well, the information is out there. I've said many times, and I've said it on our webinar to the Mid-Atlantic. We've been adhering to the Mid-Atlantic strategic plan. You're well familiar with it, Steve. And if you've been adhering to the plan, this is not going to be a heavy lift. There's some minor changes and the like, but but we're dealing with uniformity now, and everybody's going to be subject to the same rules. Everybody's going to be subject to the same disciplinary standards, whatever. And I think they should go about their business. This notion of registration requires that we get this information into the system. There is no other nefarious reason to get this information. The law requires that anyone who is a covered person must register with the authority. Okay, and it's no different than if you're participating in a horse race in a state and you didn't have HISA, you would have to get licensed, and you would agree in that license to be bound by the rules and regulations of the State Racing Commission. Well, in the two areas that we're dealing with here, medication and safety and welfare, and since HISA is the regulator with respect to those two areas of our industry, you must register with HISA and understand that they have jurisdiction over those issues. So it's the same thing. It's just a different regulatory body in charge of those two aspects of our industry.
Alan, I, again, as always, appreciate it. And a quick mention, because we did feature a visit with Chris Griffin the other day, ahead of the two match races at Match Series races at Philly. So the Match Series continues nicely along.
Yeah, we had the guys at Parks just did a stupendous job. My hat off to Joe Wilson and Sal DeBunda. They just did a great job, and we got a lot of positive comments back, as we always do. Now we're headed to Penn National, and now we're starting to get into the swing of the series.
Outstanding. MatchSeries.com. And Alan Foreman, as always, greatly appreciate it. And there's a good chance that I won't talk to you until the second half of the broadcast year, after July 9th.
Well, I appreciate that break, Keith.
Alan Foreman, everybody. THA Racing, of course, if you want to follow the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. And always great to get Alan in here. Let's do this case. We've got, well, maybe not. We may have to stay now. No, we got time. I don't know if we have time or not. I think I'm going to say we have to stay, and then we'll get Tony in here for a visit. And now there's even more to talk about with Tony after the non-DQ. And I mean, Paul Hannigan is certainly going to get days, you would think. And this, the more the head-on shot is being distributed from the Norfolk, the more egregious it looks. And when we had the pan live, it seemed pretty obvious that Riddler had come over on Brave Nation. When you see it on the head-on, it's much more obvious, and to the point where Brave Nation even gets jostled over a path. James Doyle, either checking up or, you know, maybe even being sideswiped. And what's amazing about this, very funny, yesterday when the Errat Ortiz news came down, I was involved in a few Twitter threads. Oh, it's a shame that the U.S. stewards would they'd never act like this. Oh, okay, so what Errat Ortiz did, you know, kind of fishtailing a little bit and really not holding course, that was egregious. These same stewards that everybody's lauding. Oh, if only American stewards acted like this. They've been gelded, says one tweet. They've got no balls. But then here it is 24 hours later, and you've got an absolute obvious, foul, and they leave the horse up. I mean, they subsequently, you know, might turn around, you would think, and give Hannigan, you know, a penalty for it. And, you know, this gets into the way these rules are typically, you know, we've had these discussions, you know, with Pat Cummings, the way in which the international, you know, decisions are made, etc. This one, though, Vance Hansen, and everybody that jumped aboard the Riddler, I mean, consider yourself very fortunate now, in retrospect, because, I mean, that was a disqualification. You would have thought 9 out of 10 times, 95 out of 100 times, really surprising. And you're going to see if you're tied up, if you're in the car, you know, if your job blocks, you know, racing sites and so forth, you'll see it later. Quite something. Yeah, the head on, and then that's the same case for us when we see head-ons versus pans. All right, the King George about ready to go, and in this spot, where's Kev? Let's see. Kev ended up. We got another recalcitrant horse. Israr, your 3, that 6-1 has pretty much been held steady. And he's also playing around a little bit with Deauville Legend, the 15. Deauville Legend, who is currently 22-1, actually, floated up from his 15-1. And the 7, Mr. Allen, who was going to be the biggest price, and Kev just, you know, basically playing with a little each way, $2 each way on Mr. Allen, 42-1. He's got a $6 win on Deauville Legend and a $10 win on Israr, to give you kind of a feel. All right? So they're getting ready. Only maybe another one or two to load.
Surrey Mist is due to head into stall number 7.
Your favorite, let's see. This is a, you know, sizable 21, originally 21 Surrey horses, but I think we've got three scratches or two. We've got two scratches, and so we're going to send a field of 19 on their way. Post-impressionist for William Haggis with Danny Tudhope, 6-1. Newfoundland for O'Brien and Coolmore and Ryan Moore, 4-1. And I think that's basically sharing favoritism with the Appleby Godolphin. Yeah, Secret State. The 5 is 5-1. And Israr now is down to 5-1, too. So the public basically split between Israr, Secret State, and Newfoundland.
Savvy Knight's gone in to 6. So waiting for the Godolphin pair. Levi Strauss has gone in. So it's just Secret State and Mandobi now. Last two.
There we go.
And Mandobi completes the line.
This is
set to go.
King George, mile and a half.
They're off in the King George, the 5th stakes. McNamara away pretty well. Likewise, Secret State well to the 4 early with Deauville Legend and Temesius Fox. The King Power colours, blue and white on the rail, sitting fairly handy with Israr towards the outside, along with Levi Strauss, the all blue of Godolphin, just coming through to head them with Secret State. Schmilson is up there. Israr is just trapped on the outside. McNamara tucking in. Deauville Legend, the white and red, the inside. Then Temesius Fox. Mandobi is in company with Surrey Mist. Newfoundland in midfield. Post-impressionist looked a little bit short of room, just worse than midfield. Spot the white jacket running in company with Mr. Allen. Inverness just in front of those two. Flying Dolphin, Yashin towards the back with Ballambar in the silver silks. The outside Venus Senna and Berkshire Rebel and Harry Davis also towards the rear as the field reach Swinley Bottom and complete their first half mile. It's Frankie in front on Franz Strauss with Israr and Jim Crowley on the outside. These are being followed by Secret State and William Buick just sitting in third position as they turn right-handed and start racing back to Francis. Schmilson on the outside with McNamara. Deauville Legend, Surrey Miss, Temesius Fox in midfield. Yellow and red is Savvy Knight on the outside of Newfoundland. Mandobi, a white-faced yellow jacket, is on the outside, just better than midfield. Post-impressionist is still towards the rear in that division with Inverness and Mr. Allen. Yashin still at the back with Flying Dolphin, Ballambar, and Berkshire Rebel as the field now. They've just gone past the 5-furlong marker. They've almost completed a mile here and will shortly be turning back towards home in the King George the 5th. And it is Franz Strauss that leads, making headway on the outside. Venus Senna's made quite a big move under Jamie Spencer on the outer of Israr. Secret State, Schmilson, McNamara. These are followed then by Deauville Legend and Danny Musket just on the inside, followed by Surrey Mist, Temesius Fox, ridden along Mandobi as they're into the home straight, and they've got 2.5 furlongs left to go. Frankie wants more from Franz Strauss. Israr is poised to mount a challenge. Secret State the inside, angling out Deauville Legend. Schmilson trying to keep that one in. Then Temesius Fox, Surrey Mist down the outer with Mr. Allen as now Secret State takes over. Secret State and William Buick get to the lead, running towards the last furlong. Israr, Savvy Knight trying to run on from the back with Deauville Legend on the outside. Israr's attempting to chip away at the advantage of Secret State with Deauville Legend on the outside. Secret State on the far side. Deauville Legend the near side. They race towards the line. Secret State, I think, just held Deauville Legend. It will go to the judge. Israr next. Savvy Knight was running on. So was Flying Dolphin, Surrey Mist, and Messias Fox.
Well, a nice, a very nice try by one of Kev's two, you know, major bets. Deauville Legend is going to get beat, a diminishing head here at the wire as the co-favorite-ish secret state. And it actually ended up at 5-1 when the gates opened. 5-1. So actually ticked up a couple of notches. Israr ended up at 6-1. And Newfoundland, who was really not heard from, 4-1 favoritism and beaten fave and nowhere at the end. But boy, Deauville, legend, just relentless here in the late stages. And Daniel Muscat, 18-1 is going to be the number. And here's the, I just want to see the, yeah, it's going to be really kind of the, from, about the cheek. About the cheek. They'll call it a long nose or a short head in here. Secret status above, secret state, I should say, ahead of Deauville, legend, Israr, and Savvy Knight. 515, 311. In the King George V. And so this is, you know, Kev has been chipping away like this. He's been, you know, cashing these kinds of tickets and, yeah, did have the $14 plus winner yesterday, that, you know, is helpful. Still waiting for that big pop, and it almost always comes. So still plenty of Royal Ascot to come. Two more races today. The Ribblesdale will be next in about half an hour. And then, of course, the big one, the Gold Cup. And we'll enjoy the lead up to that with Sean Clancy. All right. Let's do this case. Let's take the break here. We're 10 minutes into hour two at the races on a Thursday. Plenty of action to come. Right now, we're on the turf in New York. I did handicap the late pick five today in New York, and it's a nice sequence. And I didn't type it up because they sent out a note about the MTOs being held. So I was waiting to see. We got the same kind of day up here, I think. Kind of a grayish foreboding kind of a morning with some light showers. So ideally they escape, they, you know, escape any weather. Although they did say in the texts from the racing office at NYRA, they did say that there's some rain in the forecast for the afternoon downstate. This is interesting, and thanks to Tom Herman, who's watching and sending me some notes. He said, Nick Luck on the broadcast, Nick said that the last time there was a dangerous riding DQ at Ascot, at Royal Ascot, was 2009. So their tendency is to let the result stand. I mean, this is the argument, you know, from the international rules. Let the result stand and deal with Hannigan from a disciplinary standpoint separately. So I was just about to put up the numbers. $90.70 on the wind tote and the place price $21.20 on the Riddler. And Wallbank, the favorite, $270. The exacta, $261.60. And our man Joe McKay, Smoking Joe, he was listening to Vance Hansen, and he put the Riddler in the exacta. So he cashed. Nice job, Smoking Joe. We will come back. I want to get Tony Black in here. We missed Tony last week, so get a chance to talk to him. He had some international riding experience. At the Races, Sirius XM, Thursday edition. Back after this.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? NYRA Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Horse racing fans, major daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with the LA County Fair Meet. Opening day is Saturday, June 25th. The opening day card will be headed by the Bertrando Stakes. Plus, the daytime meet will also feature a special holiday racing program on Monday, 4th of July. The 4th of July card will be headed by the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes. Past winners of this outstanding race for fillies and mares include champions Gamine and Finest City and the outstanding Marley's Freedom. And horse players, the 4th of July program will also feature our popular live money on-track handicapping contest. You could win one of two berths to the 2023 National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. The contest format is available at losalamitos.com. Plus, our day and night weekend doubleheaders also return as our live quarter horse and